thanks to our sponsor, ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admin control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations in a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit sharegate.com/overcast_CS. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 374. Today, AC and I talk to Mikhail Pasarek from Orchestry, recorded live August 27th, 2020. This episode is brought to you by Raygun. Raygun provides full-stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full-stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your codebase, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com and get up and running within minutes and dramatically improve the online experiences of your users. Back to the show.
AC.
What's up, man?
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you
good.
On your back from vacation?
You know what it's like. It's actually really weird because lockdown has meant that I've been slowly going completely batshit crazy in my own house. And last week we went out to the beach like we did with a couple months back we went to Bend. This time we went out to the coast and it was awesome. And a little bit of beach time in the Pacific Northwest probably doesn't mean beach time the same way you think of beach time. Beach time in the Pacific Northwest means go sit on the beach, potentially, right? It's like maybe it's raining, maybe it's not, it's pretty chilly. I mean, it's the Pacific coast, so the northern Pacific coast, so it's not exactly tropical, but it is a great way to get out of town.
Yeah.
So I did that last week, and it was nice just to take a deep breath of fresh air. How about you?
It's funny you say that. We've done that a few times throughout this pandemic. We cancel vacations and end up changing it up to where it had to be a vacation where you could drive to, and we've been to the Keys for a week. We got a condo on the beach somewhere else and then did another one, so much so that like we're just exploring the whole like, let's have a realtor come in, price out the house. Where are we on like house? Can we afford actually to moving to the beach? Like general area of where we are, but could we do it? Because same thing, it's just like, to me, being on the beach, being at the coast, it's like the best therapy for me, just mental health wise. So great to get out and stuff. But it's been good. Last week, I mean, the listeners know, we had a guest host join me for the show. Julie Turner joined us. We had a great time. I was really disappointed that you weren't able to join us to be able to talk about the putting Internet Explorer on death row. That was a fun discussion we had with Julie, but I can't think of a better way to say it. Like Internet Explorer and Edge or Legacy Edge or Ledge they're both on death row. And it was the best news in the world. And somebody posted like, I think CNET posted a picture of a tombstone, and I'm like, nah, screw that, man. It doesn't even get a tombstone. It doesn't even get a plaque, man. That thing's just going to like cremate and just like dump.
Gets an unmarked grave so nobody can find it again.
Yeah, open the back door of the crematorium and just like throw those ashes all out there. It's like, that thing is, forget this thing. But this past week's been good, man. So like, so get this. I had a really proud dad moment. I know you know what's going on here as you saw it on Facebook, but so my kids started virtual school this week, and my daughter's a big Minecraft person. So 11 years old, she's a big Minecraft person. And she's one of those kind of go-getter type kids. She doesn't ask for permission so much. She just starts doing something. And not like bad stuff, but like, you know, being creative. Like she's not afraid to break her computer. She's like, started doing this. Hey, I installed this, this, and this, and I need permission to install this. I'm like, huh, okay. Yeah, so, and so she sends me a text and she's like, I want to learn Java. What's the best way? I'm like, well, okay, hold on. You want to start programming? Sweet. That's diving in a little bit on the deep end. I'm not so sure we should start with that for kids. So I did a little bit of research. Come to find out, like a day later after doing my research and asking some friends, they come back and say, I learned that the question was really, I want to learn how to build plugins to extend and customize Minecraft. To do that, I need to learn Java from what I've read. Can I do that? And I was like, okay, that's a different question. So I started doing a little bit of research.
I would have had a building Java applets for IE. That's the best way to start programming.
Right. I jumped in. I did a little bit of research. I'm in the middle of doing a class for something on Udemy. And I was like, well, let me look on Udemy and see what they're doing. And I found a few classes. And I found one that was on sale for 48 hours for $9.99. I was like, you know, I looked at it. It was like, everything in the class was, here's the Windows version, here's the Mac version. I was like, all right, sweet. I listened to the preview. The guy's like in his late teens, early 20s, just from the tone of his voice. I was like, this might be just perfect. I was like, you know what? If it isn't,
nice.
I'll take a flyer on it. So I bought it. I showed it to her. She started doing the class. I didn't realize she was doing it. And last night, she started doing it when she had some problems getting Eclipse installed, and I had to go through and fix that. And then, and before anybody says anything, I know you've said it, but before anybody says it, oh man, you shouldn't be doing Java. You should be using Visual Studio Code for instead. And there's a better idea. I'm like, the idea was to get her set up on this class and just to turn her loose and just say, just do exactly yeah. what they say. And then we can start talking about stuff. She texted me last night and she's like, can you help me? I can't get something working. I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, I'm working on the class. I'm like, oh my God, seriously? And
that's great.
Yeah. And it was a couple little tiny syntax things. Like she didn't have a closing curly bracket at the end of her main class. She named her file main.java all lowercase, where it's got to be capital M main Java. The font that the guy used and the default font in Eclipse. Man, get this doesn't make sense. The L, lowercase L and the one are absolutely identical with it's just a red squiggly line under it when you type in print one in versus print L in. And she's like,
I didn't know that.
Oh, that's important. I'm like, yeah. So we went through that stuff and she got it working and seeing her face light up to see the first thing.
That's cool.
But I had one complaint about the class. I already wrote the guy and put a comment in. And I'm like, seriously, the first thing you have somebody do is type in print line and it says, this Java is running. It's not hello world. Like, dude, you've got no street cred.
Dude, that's sacrilegious. That is, yeah.
That's what I said. So I got her working on it. I'm just sitting there biting my tongue. And I was like, all right, here's what you need to do. You need to delete the string that's in there. And you need to put hello world in. And she's like, why? And I said, well, and then she stopped and we talked. And then she wanted to know, like, she started asking about classes and methods. I'm like, oh my God, these are the exact questions you need to be asking. I was like, look, hello world is like a rite of passage. It's the first thing you do. The first web part people build in my class is hello world web part.
Yeah.
And it's just
got to keep that tradition.
It's just like you have to do it. She's like, that's so cool that you guys do that. And I'm like, and you do it now too.
Yeah, there you go. I had to do some Java for OpenHAB.
Yeah.
Home automation bridge that I've been playing with. They have plugins for stuff and it's all done with Java. Mm. And I started off doing it with Eclipse and I was scratching my head for a while, thinking back on my Java days and trying to remember how to do certain things. It is really similar to C#, but it's also got a few subtle differences. But I struggled with Eclipse a lot and ended up, now I'm all set up with code to make bug fixes to my OpenHAB plugin.
Is it that much different switching over to using VS Code for doing Java dev? I mean, I'm not trying to compare, is it better than Eclipse? But I mean, Eclipse is a bit heavy for what she's doing.
Eclipse is the same as Visual Studio is to code, right? Like Visual Studio does a whole bunch more for you, but you can do Java development and code. It's got great language support, language service support, all that sort of stuff. So it works pretty well. But I'm sure Eclipse is a little more on rails for beginners, for sure.
That's fair. I was just curious. I would prefer that she use VS Code because it's smaller, it's easier, it's lightweight. My God, the install
has some good plugins for it.
The install has to be easier than what I went through with Eclipse. Like it just was.
Oh, Eclipse.
I was surprised at how hard.
People give Visual Studio a bad run in terms of its install. Eclipse is just as bad.
The installer didn't even work. We tried it four times. No antivirus installed. She's got nothing special installed. And it's like that tiny little installer that was trying to get off all these mirrors and download stuff. And it kept failing. I'm like, how do I get around this? Everything was about proxies. I'm like, I'm too damn stupid to have a proxy set up on my house. I'm like, there's no way. And it ended up.
It's also got all these weird names. You're like, I just want the latest one.
Say again?
It's got all these weird names. Like, I don't know, like Foxglove and like Rose Petal and stuff. And you're like, I just want the latest version. Yeah. Can I just have the latest one? I got no idea what the name is.
I tried all this stuff and I finally was like, downloads, like other options. It goes, download everything at once. And I'm like, I'll take that. And it was just install. It opens up the DMG and it's like, just drag that over your applications folder. I'm like, sweet.
Your drive is out of space.
Yeah, we're good. No, the only, I mean, it was like, the installer, is it wouldn't even like VS Code. The installer was 50 megs. The download everything and install it was 250 megs. I'm like, this isn't like Visual Studio, which is like, it's a 50 meg download that's going to install somehow 250 gigs, right? So it wasn't even like that.
Yeah. Oh, the keeper for this week is Microsoft Flight Simulator launched this past week, and the internet is on fire because the web installer was like 7 megabytes or something, and or 100 meg, I don't know. It was somewhere around there. That seems like a big range until you realize the size of the actual game. So the internet's on fire because people are downloading, like basically the base game is 120 something gig. Mm. And so it is not insignificant. And people, they're hitting their data caps they never thought they had. They're like, all right, I'll see you in a week once it's finished downloading.
Okay.
And all that.
So I have a question because I've decided that I want to give it a shot. I want to play it, but I've got to set up a separate partition because I'm on Mac. And so I was going to do a boot camp partition.
Yeah, you want a dual boot.
But I only plan on doing this for Flight Simulator. So I saw the requirements at 150 gigs on your machine, but clearly that's not going to be enough because I got Windows on there as well. But with all the high resolution graphics and stuff, is this like am I looking like a half a terabyte type thing that I should be thinking?
No. No, the download is, I mean, the download for the game is, you know, 150, something like that. But it also streams a lot of content in real time from the tubes, right? So it gets real ATC traffic, it gets real weather traffic, it gets real imagery from Bing and satellite stuff. So there's a bunch more it downloads as well.
I didn't realize it did even real ATC traffic. So if you're normally, if you're like flying in San Francisco, you get like the local traffic that's going on right then.
Yeah, you do.
That's too, all right, I really want
to. You can turn all that on. It's pretty sweet. Anyway, let's get on to the meat and potatoes.
This episode is brought to you by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you definitely should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new eSign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to sprint it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at nintex.com. This podcast is brought to you by AvePoint. If you like The Cloud Show, you will love the Shift Happens podcast with Microsoft MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation projects. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably arise when ambitious people try to impact their workplace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to www.avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag Shift Happens. That's one word, hashtag Shift Happens, wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today. And we're back.
All right, AC, this week we have a very special guest with us. I'd just like to say before we introduce Michael in more detail, I love seeing new products on the block. And a couple of weeks ago, I noticed, I think it was on LinkedIn, that Michael had posted about his new startup called Orchestry. Now, for those who are not familiar with Michael, his longtime SharePoint community person, I suppose, has been an MVP, ran Bonsai Intranet for many years before selling that, and Dynamic Owl, from north of the wall in our good friends, Canada. So welcome to the show, Michael, who's the Chief Executive Officer of the new kid on the block, Orchestry.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm both CEO and janitor, so my role goes for a little bit of everything. So it's good to be here.
That's the world of startups,
isn't
it? It is,
it is.
So hearing that, is that kind of like how it is in my house where I do the same thing? I'm CEO and janitor, but I also, my wife does human resources, which causes a lot of problems though. So it's like, is it something like that as well? Or you get to do human resources as well?
No, I get to do, I mean, I do most of the stuff that's not technical, to be honest with you, but we've got a whole bunch of other awesome team members that help. But yeah, you do everything, right? I mean, I'm literally from, you know, yesterday we had help desk issues, so I'm trying to work out what's going on there. And then we had to get a mailing address, so, you know, we did that. So everything from, yeah. And then we've got a 9-month-old as well. So quick tip for everyone there, if you want to do a startup, that's the best time when you've just had a baby. That's really is the ultimate time when you don't have much sleep.
You're up in the middle of the night anyway. Yeah. So what do you got to lose?
It's pretty funny, yeah. And we're on the West Coast, and most of our clients are, you know, most of the people we're speaking to are East Coast or even in Europe. So, you know, I'm having really early meetings. They're like, oh, you know, we're really sorry that we're getting you up so early. I'm like, listen, I've been up for hours. There's no issues here at all. Don't worry about it.
Okay, so hearing that experience, then I got a question for you. And CJ is going to have to be the arbiter and decide which is worse. So, doing a startup, launching a startup with a 9-month-old, having a baby. I did the same when I launched my company, but in the 2 weeks prior to it, we were dealing with Hurricane Irma destroying the state of Florida where we were and losing power, losing internet. So I'm not sure which is like, I'm not sure which one of us decided to like, mine was a little more temporary. So I mean, I know I'm not dealing with Irma still, but I don't know, CJ, which one do you think is harder?
Oh boy, same but different.
Yeah, I mean, having a 9-month-old is very much like dealing with a hurricane.
Survival versus, you know, it's like mortality versus a different type of survival. Yeah. You're fighting every day.
Well, everyone's been complaining about COVID, right, and being stuck at home. We haven't left the house since we've had the baby, right? So for us, it's been pretty much the same thing. I mean, she was born in on Halloween last year. And then, you know, the first couple of months, it's really cold here, obviously, you know, Canada being what it is. Well, cold for Vancouver. I don't want other Canadians to misconstrue what I'm saying. And cold for Vancouver is like 5 degrees, right? So the rest of Canada laughs at us. But yeah, when the lockdown order came here that you can't move, I was just like, well, we're not going anywhere anyway. So it worked out really well.
Like people get to leave the house? Wow.
Yeah, cool. No, we'll take the dog out and we'll take our daughter out for a bit of a walk. But apart from that, it's not like we were journeying anywhere. So
Nice. Well, I'm glad to hear it's all going all right. Why don't we start things off by just giving, if you wouldn't mind giving our listeners a quick intro to who you are and a little bit about your background before we get stuck into, you know, what you're working on now.
So I'm Michael Bisarek. I'm the CEO and janitor of Orchestry. So a bit of my background, I was born in Poland, hence the funny spelling of Michael. And CJ, great work on trying to pronounce that at the very beginning. I know you were kind of juggling mentally what it is there.
Here's my reasoning for that. So my previous, I had a boss at Microsoft who was Michael from Israel, mm-hmm. right? And so as soon as I see your name, your first name, I want to pronounce it that way, not as Michael. So anyway, my apologies.
No, it's all good, mate. It's all good. No, so I was born in Poland, grew up in Australia, hence the accent and the animosity between Chris and I. That's fairly standard between New Zealand and Australia. I used to be a chef. That's actually what my background was. I spent a few years cooking professionally, actually probably about 6 years. And I spent actually 2 years working with Gordon Ramsay. So this is a quick tip. 2 years working with Gordon Ramsay in Royal Hospital Road in London in 1999, 2000. So before he came to the US.
So should I be yelling at you?
No.
Would that go better if we were yelling?
No, I mean, it was an interesting time, right? It was before he got famous and before the restaurant had 3 Michelin stars, it still had 2, but it was fun, you know, when you're young, but it's a tough profession. I mean, it's quite amazing just how tough it is. And now he's taken on, I think, a bit of a caricature of himself, but that was fun. And then went back to Australia, went back to university, did a computer science degree. I remember, it's funny, you guys were talking about Java. I remember when I went to university, they just swapped from C and Ada to using Java. And all the lecturers really had barely idea of what object-oriented programming was. So, you know, it was like the first year, no one really knew anything about Java. They were trying to work out what's going on. And like you said, applets, I think the first thing we built was some sort of applet. It was rough. And then spent a bit of time in Australia and then moved here to Vancouver about 12 years ago. That's when I got into SharePoint. So, you know, back in the 2008 days, so lots of on-prem. Worked with the product for a few years. Started a consulting company called Dynamic Hour Consulting in 2012, I think it was. And we were doing a lot of intranet work, but back then it was, you know, very highly customized intranets on 2007, 2010, 2013, right? So lots of customizations, a ton of custom code. And we really found what we were doing was kind of the same thing over and over again for customers. And, you know, regardless of how unique customers thought that they were, there was really common capabilities that every customer had. And I thought, well, this doesn't make any sense because we're charging these customers all this time and money to get to a place where we could have gotten to within a week, as opposed to spend 6 months of doing requirements gathering and then telling them, you know, having news on your homepage is probably a really good idea. Yeah. So we started Bonsai in 2014. So we're one of the earliest ones into the field. And like I said, originally, because we're from Canada, we thought we were going to do work with, you know, some smaller Canadian-based companies. That quickly changed. We just started doing work with really large US companies. So we did the intranet for Macy's, which is like a couple of 100,000 people, which was insane. AMD, Expedia, Compass Group, which is some huge conglomerate as well. So we were really lucky. Over 5 years, two of our clients won Nielsen Norman Awards for their intranet. So super proud of that. And then we got acquired in 2018. Yeah, I'm trying to work out all of the dates here. 2018.
It's a blur.
It is a blur, yeah. By a private equity company based out of Austin. So had a bit of a break. Pretty burnt out by then, to be honest with you. We pushed pretty hard. And it was really, as a first startup, you know, it's the ultimate kind of thing, right? That we got acquired and we went through all of that, but we were really burnt out of it. We were working all the time. We had customers who were waiting 6 to 9 months to even start projects with us. And it was just getting really, really big really quickly. So it was probably good timing. So we had a bit of a break, bought a dog, then we had a baby. So all of those things were crossed off, which was great.
You caught up on stuff, on what you hadn't done for the last 4 years or whatever.
I was like sleeping, walking the dog. I was making cocktails for a while. Like there was like 6 months when I decided to become like a cocktail maker. And I was just making cocktails like at 11 a.m. in the morning because we weren't working. So there's nothing else to do. And then the background.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah, I know. And then the background of Orchestry was, you know, I wanted to get back in because got a little bit bored. And during that year, I really didn't look much at what was going on in Microsoft 365. I wanted to really to step away with it and just to relax, right? So I, you know, wanted to get a bit of a break and came back in. And obviously Teams was launched, but it just started to get a lot of traction there. You know, Microsoft 365, Office 365 really became apparent that everyone was moving to the cloud. So I did a bit of a research project in terms of trying to understand the opportunities and the challenges customers were facing and even partners. And originally it was around me probably doing another consulting company, which was in a bit of a smaller scale, but trying to see if there's a market fit there for a particular type of offering or a particular type of service. And we did, I think I spoke to probably 100 different companies and 30 or 40 different partners, you know, trying to understand what are you doing, you know, what's hot, what's not. Obviously, four themes came out, and I'll maybe talk about them a little bit later on, but definitely we just heard, you know, it's all about Teams, you know, the SharePoint stuff was interesting, particularly coming from the intranet space, where Microsoft made so many advances in the intranet capability that we found a lot of partners and a lot of customers were saying, you know, we bought this intranet in a box product a few years ago, but now maybe the out-of-the-box solution with some light customizations is going to be okay for us. So it definitely changed. And then, yeah, from that research project, I thought, well, I think there's a big opportunity to create, you know, a solution like Orchestry, which is pretty different than what's out there. But definitely, like I said, speaking to customers and especially partners, it was definitely apparent. Because partners, every partner I spoke to when I said, what are you doing with Teams? We're building provisioning solutions. We're trying to build templating solutions. We're trying to onboard customers. We're trying to help them with the what to use when questions. It was just a theme that came up over and over again. And I thought, you know, there's an opportunity there to have a bit of a product which is going to address all of those issues.
Well, that leads us pretty nicely into what Orchestry is all about, I guess. So you've basically taken this research project and gone, cool, I'm going to go build something to address these common things I've heard from these customers I've spoken to and these partners I've spoken to. And yeah, when I noticed your post on Orchestry a few weeks back, I'm guessing that was your sort of first foray, just starting to tell the world about it. So why don't you spend a minute or two just, you know, letting our listeners know, what is Orchestry and what does it do?
Sure. Yeah. So we only launched 2 weeks ago, CJ. So that's probably why. So the official launch was only a couple of weeks ago. So that's why. So essentially, we're calling Orchestry an adoption and a governance platform for Microsoft 365. And really, it addresses four use cases that we found, or four particular needs that we really found that most organizations face. So the first one was the what to use when question, right? So when we spoke to companies, especially end users, that what to use when idea, especially from end users, was hugely, hugely problematic, particularly for organizations that aren't investing, you know, training or support for their users. And even large organizations weren't really doing that. So the idea was, you know, something as simple as if I'm an end user and I want to manage tasks within Microsoft 365, right? Which one of these various 50 ways of managing tasks should I use? Should I use lists? Should I use Planner? Should I use Outlook? Should I use, you know, a SharePoint task list, to do all of those things? And we found from the end user perspective, like I said, I think we as consultants think that end users have a good enough understanding of all of the tools within Microsoft 365 to be able to make that decision. But there's so many subtle complexities involved in what those tools do and what they don't do that was, you know, really, really, really problematic. The next one was around basic templating. So particularly templating around Teams and SharePoint sites. So lots of partners were building templating as well as provisioning solutions, but I'll talk about the templating piece. And really the idea was, and what I believe with an orchestry is that users don't go to Microsoft 365 to request a team or a SharePoint site. They don't really care. They want to have something that's going to help them become more effective. So they go to manage a project. They go to have an area where they can communicate. They go to create a workspace, as we call it, where they can work on a product design. And from a templating side, you know, Teams especially has got some pretty light templating capabilities. I know there's some more stuff coming out there. But still, even with the new stuff, if you template or you copy an existing team, you get the team, you get the channels, you get the tabs, but the tabs aren't configured, right? The tabs are there, but they're in an unconfigured state. So what we wanted to do and what we heard what a lot of partners were trying to do is to create more of a full end-to-end templating sort of process where a user can come in, choose from something. We call them workspaces at Orchestry. So think of a workspace as a pre-configured solution based on top of any Microsoft 365 workloads, whether it's Teams, Planner, SharePoint, Microsoft Lists, all of that type of stuff. But really, the experience should be from that end user side. I go, I see a list of solutions, I answer some questions, and I have this thing built out, ready to go and ready to rock and roll for me. Which brings me on to the next thing, provisioning. So everyone was trying to build provisioning solutions, right? So because of sprawl and everything else, and they quickly found that it's not quite as easy as one might think it is, right? So, you know, basic templating, PNP does a really good job of provisioning, but there's also gaps there, but it does a relatively good job. But if you want something end-to-end in terms of take over the group, the team, all of the channels, all of the tabs configured, the OneNote file, the entire SharePoint site with any content, lists, customizations, as well as any planner tasks with that, there was nothing really out there which was robust enough. And that's what we heard, that, you know, partners were trying to build these things. They were using Power Automate, or they were using Flow or Azure Runbooks. If they were using Power Automate, they would build these things, then they'd be like, oh God, now we have to license everyone, right, to request these things. So then it became problematic. And it became really complex really, really quickly, right? I think people thought this was going to be way easier to do, but they just found it became just really, really difficult. And, you know, honestly, the APIs, not crash hot, right? Not crash hot at all in terms of these things, and a whole bunch of timing issues and everything else. So even if they were using something like Flow, I think I spoke to, out of 30 partners, I think 20 of them had the same issue. So we create a team, we try to upload the logo, it fails. And that's it, right? That's what they were doing. So now there's a whole bunch of logic in terms of, do we retry the logo? So all of those things. And then the last one out of those four things. So what to use when, templating, governance, templating, provisioning, and then obviously governance. So I think governance, what we've tried to concentrate on is really from that initial piece of people going in and requesting assets within Microsoft 365. So Teams, SharePoint sites, Planner, things like naming conventions, just controlling who can request what and when was really, really key. And, you know, you guys know this. We had governance challenges within SharePoint. We've always had that. And now Teams, I think, makes it even worse because it's even easier to go and create Teams. But some of the stuff that I saw at some of these customers, I mean, the stories were like, so we had one person that we spoke to, one organization, pretty big. They launched Teams. Within 6 weeks, they had 5,000 Teams. They ended up deleting 4,800 of them, right? And they showed me, and they had a list within their intranet of the most comical team names. And it was like Michael's test, George's test, do not invite John to this team. Like that was the name of the team. Do not invite John to this team. So all of these things.
Tons of duplicates, no doubt.
Tons of duplicates, right? Tons of duplicates. And then people putting in like privacy within the name. So, you know, my private team or project private one or project private two. Because people don't know, right? So you open up teams, you don't give them any sort of governance. And in some of these organizations, they even did the process of like, okay, before you request a team, here's like a document, you know, as a user that you have to use. So, you know, you have to go in and the name, you have to work it out. People didn't really care, right? End users were like, to hell with
this. I'm just going to go to the IT department.
Pretty much, yeah. So I think the governance challenge in particular of that initial creation piece was something that, like I said, you know, there's some out-of-the-box capabilities within MS365 to do that in terms of group namings and, you know, allowing certain groups to limit who can create things. But like I said, we thought there was a bit of an opportunity there. So they're really the four things that we're trying to target. And with Orchestry, the goal is we want to concentrate on the end user side as much as on the IT admin side. Because I think a lot of these governance tools are very IT driven and focused. And a lot of these provisioning tools are very IT driven and focused. The idea with Orchestry, what makes it unique is A, from a templating perspective, you literally point it at a team and we'll take everything over. And I mean everything over. And Andrew, you've probably tried to write some of these things before. It was god awful trying to make this work. Like the amount of defensive coding that we do to make sure that if something's not ready, we do something else. But realistically, instead of, you know, using site designs for the SharePoint side and Azure runbooks or whatever else, you point Orchestry at it and we'll take everything over. There's a bunch of logic there. We've added on, you know, we started with PMP. We've added on a whole bunch of custom code also to make that much more robust. But we take everything over. We're super proud of that. So you can have a team with channels and tabs and channels or chabs as they're called.
Chabs, yeah.
We'll take all of it over. We've got a bunch of logic in there as well. So if you've got a channel that's pointing to a document within the template group, in the new one, we'll point it at the new one. But if it's pointing to something else, we're smart enough to say, well, it's probably more of a static type of link scenario. All of the SharePoint content is going to be brought over as well from the SharePoint side, which is pretty unique. So you can use Orchestry to control both SharePoint modern team sites as well as comm sites through there as well. And then a whole bunch of other things which we found a lot of organizations were using, which were coming up. So removing groups from the GAL, for instance, right, is one of the features we've got coming up, or hiding them from Outlook. So yeah, just trying to make that whole process super easy for IT side and then empower the users that they could go and request something, customize it and get something created which works.
It sounds like a really good solution. It solves a lot of the problems that you see so many organizations have. I mean, even from the big organizations to the smaller organizations, do you have a sense of what your target is into your target customers at a, you know, mid-cap, small, you know, large organizations? But is it, who do you see like benefiting the most from this? What organizations that are, I know you've only been live for a couple of weeks. I'm guessing that you probably had some early access customers that you were, you know, prototyping stuff out with. But who do you see as like getting some of the biggest benefit from this? Because I can see both sides of it. You've got the end users that want it, but you've got some of the, I can see a small organization getting completely overwhelmed with what am I supposed to choose from? What do I need to set up here? But they don't have an IT group to go talk to, and they've got, all they have is the community to go talk to. And you know, go ask a question on Facebook or on Twitter, and you're going to get 50 replies with 50 different answers, and maybe a couple plus ones and some animated GIFs in there. So, but it's like you don't get real guidance on like which direction you should go. Whereas the large caps, you know, they want the governance side because they want to be able to have more control over and have more throughput of being able to set people up. Do you see kind of an equal kind of a thing, or do you see like both sides, or do you see one side benefiting more from this?
We do. So I'll tell you kind of the three main types of customers that we're seeing. So from a customer size perspective, it's actually both spectrums. Now, the reason for that is part of the kind of thing with Orchestry is we have like that templating engine that you can go and point to existing stuff, but we also are releasing our own workspace templates based on best practices, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we want to do, our goal in Orchestry is to almost become like the lookbook, but for teams and for collaboration sites. Because I think that's a big missing thing, right? So for a lot of organizations, like how do you run a project within teams? What channels do I have? What tabs do I have? Now, of course, they're going to be unique in every organization. But one of the things we are doing with Orchestry when you install it is we have some workspace templates based on, you know, very generic use cases, right? So projects, product development, and everything else. And that really helps, I think, Andrew, from the smaller customer size, mm-hmm. where, like, how do we run a project in MS365? Okay, so here's a team, bunch of tabs, bunch of channels. We've got a SharePoint site, and it's all pretty basic stuff, right? So, you know, news, who the project members are, a document library with some pre-configured views. We've got a couple of our own web parts that we've also developed, SPFX web part, which pull tasks and display them. It's something like a timeline, right, directly on that SharePoint site. So for smaller customers, that's where we're finding a ton of traction, because literally they're like, well, how do I run a project? Okay, well, this will do. Right? As opposed to, like you said, you go online and you say, how do I run a project in Teams? And there's 50,000 different ways. For the larger customers, they're really, they want to get some standardization across, you know, all of the teams and all of those collaborative sites that they're essentially using. And like I said, typically, you know, they were doing a bunch of custom code, but of course, if something changes, they have to go and change that custom code with Orchestry, because we do a live extraction each time someone asks for something. Someone can go in, update that template, and they're basically ready to go. But taking customer kind of size out of it, in terms of the three main types of customers we're seeing. So the first one is because of COVID, right? We deployed Teams, we turned everything off, but we did turn on chat, calendaring, and messaging. Now we want to turn on Teams, right? And we really have no idea what to do, but we don't just want to turn it on because we think it's going to be a horrible...
So it's like a first filter before you kind of go through there. You have more control over what you're going to turn on. I'm turning on Teams, it's I'm turning on this experience with Teams.
Correct. So basically you're saying, so with Orchestry, it's an app that sits within Teams. Most of our organizations, they disable group creation for the entire tenant. So the only way they can create something is through Orchestry. So they go in and instead of being presented with, you know, here's a blank team, they're presented with what we call workspaces, which are pre-configured elements. Now, those could be just a blank team template, but most of the time, at least it's some solutions or some things that the organization has already defined. Because the other big thing that we saw was most of the organizations using Teams, most of the Teams is just one channel. It's general, right? And all the documents are slapped in there and all of the conversations are slapped in there because users just don't, you know, they haven't been trained or they don't understand how to create additional channels. So even having that ability to have, here's a basic outline of how a project should be run within an organization. Here's a basic outline of how you could use Teams for departmental collaboration, for instance. So that quick start, I think, is really useful. The next type of customer is we call it the Teams remediation customer. It's really the, you know, oh my God, we launched Teams and we have 5,000 teams and we have no idea who they are, what they're doing. Most teams have had an owner, but now that owner's left because they've been furloughed. So the members are basically screwed because they can't do anything, right? So there's a whole bunch of things through there. So one of the features within Orchestry as well was what we call a workspace directory feature. So that allows you to actually show not just your teams, but all of your teams and all of your SharePoint sites through there, allows you to identify, you know, various aspects of that. But also we allow you to attach your own taxonomy and metadata to that. And that's something that's really powerful. So I can go in and I can say, okay, show me all of the teams related to the North American location for research and development, right? And within, you know, a second, we have all of those available. So for those types of clients, they use Orchestry to get a handle on all the stuff that's coming, that's going to be provisioned going forward. But they also use it to say, okay, what do we have? Let's catalog it. Let's at least provide some structure to it and make that usable. And then the third one is the more of the advanced customer. So we've got some pretty nifty features. We call them Orchestry features, but essentially what you can do, you can use something like PNP to, let's say you've got your own custom SPFX web part, you can extract that through PNP, make that available as an Orchestry feature. And then when a user goes and requests a workspace, they can say, actually, I want this PNP web part as part of my workspace. And we've built a whole bunch of custom code that'll go and add that pre-configured web part to a particular place on there. So that's pretty neat. So it's really allowing those users that customization. And what a lot of our advanced customers are doing is using that to allow users to customize those workspaces without IT involvement. So for instance, Andrew, you can go in and say, here's a couple of standard lists, a couple of standard libraries, some web parts, maybe some other things. When you request your workspace, here's the stuff that's going to be part of this as required, but here's a couple of optional pieces that you can request as a user, and then we'll do all of that or all of that provisioning for them. And that's also the thing that helps with the what to use when question, right? Because for an organization, a tasks orchestry feature can be based on Planner for one organization, but it can be based on Microsoft Lists from another. But as a user, I really don't care. It's like, I want to manage tasks. Give me the tasks feature. Whatever comes out the end is what I need. And that level of abstraction we found has been working super well, particularly as there's going to be more things in Microsoft, which are probably going to do similar things as other things. So that ability to customize that experience through their help.
That's never happened.
Never happens.
It never happens.
I'm still waiting for, what was it, Outlook Groups? Remember Outlook Groups? That thing leaked like 6 months ago?
Vaguely.
Yeah, I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting for that. That'll be that'll solve all of the issues that people are having. So...
Hey, just this week, I got completely confused with the whole like Microsoft Graph and Office Graph thing. I'm getting this message in my tenant that's telling me that you haven't turned on the Office Graph. And so I click on the thing. Why isn't it turned on? I go click on it and it talks about Microsoft Graph. And I'm like, I don't get this. And someone's like, oh, you have to explain it. I have to explain it like this. And I'm like, so I need to go find a tweet stream that explains the difference. I'm like, this is just, guys, come on. This is so simple.
So you focused on those four main areas of, I guess, solution areas, right? Problems that you're trying to solve for people. What does this look like for end users? So if I was a user in an organization that used Orchestry, are you based in Teams or are you some other sort of website that users go to? Like, how do you deliver Orchestry? Is it a SaaS offering?
It is, yeah. So it's a SaaS offering. So it's an Azure AD app, which we expose through the Teams interface. So it's just a Teams app that can go through there. 10-minute install, that's something that we are super, super proud of. So we do a whole bunch of really neat stuff from the install perspective. Nice. But yeah, it's actually exposed as an app through Teams because that's where people are living and working. So the idea is, like I said, instead of me going to SharePoint to request SharePoint sites or Planner to request Planner or, you know, Teams to request Teams, we can drive all of them through that Orchestry interface there. And like I said, give them the ability to choose from these predefined workspace templates, as well as customize that request. And we also do some things in terms of just helping the user through that process. So a great example of that is people creating duplicate teams, which are conceptually the same, but they're called different. Right? So project space A versus project underscore A versus project dash A. Particularly in larger organizations, I was shocked by how often that happens because someone goes in, creates that team. The team is private, so you don't know that it exists. Someone else goes in, creates something else. They maybe work on it on a couple of days. They realize actually there's another thing that exists. And then they go back to the IT team and they're like, well, can you merge these things together? IT's like, there's no way we're going to be able to do that, you know.
The magical, mythical merge button.
It's right next to the easy button.
Yeah. So what we do within Orchestry is obviously we'll block you, but as you're typing it in, we'll give you what are called similar name pieces. So if you type in marketing, we'll say, hey, here's some other SharePoint sites or teams that have marketing either in the title or the description of that. You might want to check these out before you go and create global underscore marketing because global space marketing already exists, right?
New marketing,
yeah. So, you know, that whole experience is really designed to kind of streamline users through that process and enforce some consistency through there. And like I said, we've really tried to make that from the user experience side, and I have to give you guys a look one day, but from that UX side, we wanted to make it really beautiful and really simple for end users. And we did a bunch of UX testing, and I'm always shocked when you do UX testing around the stuff that comes up. You know, like there's a box there, which is like an error. People don't see it. Like they do not see it. And I'm like, it's there. Like, where is it? It's crazy. So there's all these subtle things that we did. But one of the really interesting ones was, this is the best example, the team or the site description field, right? Super useful field to provide additional context, but no one fills it in. So we were like, well, that's easy. We're just going to make it required, right? I mean, it's pretty easy. So we made it required. I think we sent probably 1,000 people through. We used a remote UX testing service, which is pretty neat. So we sent 1,000 people through. It got filled out every time, but 80% of it was garbage, right? It didn't make sense to what people were filling out. So we're like, okay, well, what do we do? So the approach that we came on after a while is, as a user's typing in the name of the actual workspace, we'll pre-can that field with like the workspace name requested by your name at this particular time. So it's like a string that we generate that dynamically. What we found was that users were much more likely to go in there and actually say, this isn't right. I need to put something decent in there. And they would click in there. As soon as they click in, we remove that. And they're much more likely to type something in that makes sense. Now, that still shocks me to this day, but I have empirical proof that that works. And it works really well. People are much more likely to say, actually, this is wrong. I'm going to make it right. as opposed to, I can't be bothered fitting this in. This doesn't make sense for me.
Starting from scratch. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like an MVP when you're building a product too. I mean, it's like when you're trying to get something from a customer and saying, you know, what do I need? They don't really, they're kind of nebulous in giving their answers. But when they actually get to play with something, then it's like, here comes all the feedback. Here's what I really want. Like, now that you've seen something, now you get to play with it. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's a smart move.
Yeah, no, it's worked. That's worked pretty well.
That's cool. Sending them through that testing and getting that feedback early and seeing where you can make those small tweaks that's going to pay dividends in the long run. As a former SaaS startup founder, have you already been asked about whether you have an on-prem version?
I don't know. I'm sure you guys get this question. No, we haven't. We made it very clear. So we only support the modern stuff. So we've had a number of customers saying, can we provision classic sites? And we're like, no, we will not. And we have not. No, we're not doing on-prem.
I'm saying that facetiously.
No,
I know. Just, you know, you got this perfect customer and everything's looking just nicely lined up and brilliant. And they're like, actually, we'd like an air gap version running on a submarine at 10,000 feet below the surface. Can you do that?
Yeah. I think what's nice doing this the second time round is that you're a little bit more, if you have a clearer vision, you can say no to customers. And especially when you're doing your first startup, right? You want to please everyone. So some customer will come in and be like, I will. And the classic thing is, I'm ready to sign, but can you just put this one feature in, which of course is really important, right? And then, you know, you'll find after a while that like every customer is saying this, right? And then you've got this bloat and you've got a whole bunch of, you know, crazy crap in your product.
Toggles. I call them yats. Yet another toggle.
Yeah. Just all right, this, you
it's
know.
Always another toggle.
So for this really specific use case, and one of the things that I think we learned, you know, when we were running Bonsai also, is you just say no, right? And you explain why, but we're, you know, especially with Orchestry, like, you know, we launched it, like, it's ready to go to full product. We've got a roadmap coming up, but I wanted to see what the market comes back with in terms of feature sets and how the product is taken. But definitely, yeah, from the perspective of, you know, people asking for particular pieces of functionality, the thing is, listen, this is not going to do every single thing that you possibly want, right? We might market it like that, but once you actually, you know, we're going to be honest enough to say we're not going to do all of this. But I think you have to be really clear in terms of a long-term vision of what you want. Because otherwise, yeah, like we're doing configuration around group options, right? So when you provision something, there's a whole bunch of stuff we know that admins are doing when that group is created. So removing them from the GAO is a big one. Removing them from Outlook, the list, like that group list on the left, is something that we found a lot of organizations were doing through PowerShell. So like these things make sense to go in the product. It's a pretty standard use case. But there's also, you know, 19 other thousand options within groups, right? And we've had customers say, oh, we use this specific configuration option that I've never heard of. You know, we need to have this in here or we can't go forward. We just say, well, I'm sorry, right? It's not something that's going to be useful to the rest of our customers.
Well, and if you're trying to go for a much more, like to simplify, like you said, you're going for an approach that's much more user-focused or user-centric, right? In their experience. And the more of those options that you end up providing people, the more complicated it gets really quick. And it's just, you want, if you can give that more streamlined experience, or if you can, it's like this in a SaaS, it's also like this in info products. I mean, I do training. And so someone's like, hey, I would love it if you do a lesson like this. And I'm like, at some point, I could go on forever. I could add every single thing to this, but nobody's going to have it's one person's going to watch it, or three people are going to watch it. It may be applicable to 100, but nobody's going to see it because somebody's going to get confused or they're going to be overwhelmed. It's more of a, I want to give you an experience that what you can do, and I can give you guidance on if that's something you want to do. Here's a knowledge base article that we show you. Like, do you want to go write the PowerShell to go do that? Here's how you can go do that. But we're going to get you to this point, and then here's some other stuff we can provide you. It's funny because it's one of the experiences, or one of the, I guess, frustrations that I have with a lot of Microsoft products is that they try to cater to so many different enterprises that they give you so many different little settings and tiny little things you can't find that makes the simplest stuff, like enabling sync on Edge, on the new Edge, in your tenant, like making that turn. I was convinced that still didn't work. And I finally talk to the lady that's in charge, and she goes through these screens to go find this stuff. And she gives me this one screen that you have an Edge that's got like 60 different Edge sync configuration settings. And I'm just looking through this and she goes, take a screenshot of that screen. And I'm like, it's going to be a big file, but okay. And I'm looking through it and I finally go through it. I'm like, oh, there's the error right there buried in the corner that says that you haven't enabled this one thing. I'm like, it's a browser. Why do I have to enable an Azure AD? Anyway, it's one of those kinds of things, right? You want the simpler the experience, there's a reason why I stayed on Chrome for so long. And similar kind of a thing. You want to keep the nice single experience. It's good to hear about a company that's doing that says, I have a vision of where we want to go. I have a vision of the problems that we're trying to solve. I recognize that it doesn't solve every single person that wants those different problems, but it also kind of, you challenge customers and be like, do you really need that? Is it really that important that you're doing that? Do you really want to go that customized? Because that's what really got us in a lot of trouble with SharePoint in the beginning, was that we all went so custom to our own solutions, and then you got stuck and you couldn't go anywhere with new versions for the longest time.
Yeah, I think the reason for that, particularly for startups in the Microsoft space, is that most people come from a consulting background. Mm-hmm. And as you know, when you come from a consulting background, your job is to say, yep, we'll make that happen, no matter how batshit crazy the idea is. Mm-hmm. I mean, realistically, right? That's what happens. And with a product—
Do you have enough time?
Yeah.
And do you have enough money?
Exactly. Yeah. And if you've got the money, we'll build you whatever you want.
If you've got a PO, we can put anything you want in this product.
Yeah. And that's the challenge of that thinking, especially doing a product, right? And it even makes it more complex, I think, on doing it on top of platform like MS365, because like I said, you've got to also think about all of these underlying pieces. And couple of things that we want to do with Orchestry is A, to keep it simple. The other thing that we didn't want to do as well is, you know, from what we saw for a lot of products generally out there, a lot of them kind of do the same stuff that you can do in out of the box, except the interface is a little bit nicer, right? And that's definitely something which we didn't want to do either. You know, so, you know, we want to introduce some more governance lifecycle management, but most of the stuff that we saw, it's exactly the same that you can do in out of the box Office 365, right? Or Microsoft 365. So we don't want to get down that approach. It has to be something that provides additional value, as opposed to have something that's, you know, either
a new screen,
you know, a new screen, basically, or just a simpler way to configure that, right? And it's tough because, as you know, right, you always get customers saying, yep, we'd love to go forward with this, but we need, you know, we need this, or we used to get this all the time, we still do now. It's like, oh, we'll pay extra if you put this feature in.
Sure, it's nice money, but you're chasing your tail on features that will not get you further towards your end goal. For 80% of customers,
yeah,
yes, you know, as opposed to the 20.
It's something that does, that saying Peter Thiel had, where it helps you get from 1 to 2, but it doesn't help you get from 0 to 1. It doesn't really scale. Like you're gonna win that customer over and have all that effort, and now you get this extra technical debt you're gonna have to maintain, but you've also added some complexity to it. But is it going to get you another customer? Is it going to get you another customer? Now, U.S. government comes around and says, you know, hey, we want, this is a 6-figure or 7-figure feature. You know, I mean, I can get that if you're like, oh, so we can compromise on our values a little on this one. But no, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely tough.
So where do people go to get started with Orchestry? Like if somebody's sitting there going, oh boy, I've got templating issues, I've got governance issues, I've got what do I use to, you know, to create, what should I be using type issues. Where can people go to learn more about Orchestry, find out a little bit more, maybe see a demo or a video or something, get in touch with you or your team and get the ball rolling to see if Orchestry can help them out?
Yeah, so if you go to the website, www.orchestry.com, that has all the information that you need. We're building that website up more and more. It's just the first version of it, but it's pretty neat. We do offer 21-day trials, and you can literally be up and running in 15 minutes with Orchestry. So it's fairly cool. Like I said, no PowerShell scripts, no going in and putting in Azure application IDs, any of that craziness. It really is a very kind of simplified install. If you go there, you can reach out to me as well. I'm more than happy to help. Like I said, we're at the start of a pretty long journey, we think, with the product. And like I said, I think it's a really common set of problems that we're finding that customers are facing. It's been pretty overwhelming, right? Like we've only launched a couple of weeks ago, and it's been bananas. Just how many customers, how many partners have reached out to us. So I'm tired, but super happy as well, because it's much better than there being silence.
For sure. Well, it's a good kind of problem to have. That's
congratulations
great.
Will be on this side of the launch too. It's a couple of weeks into it. That's got to feel, I know the first few days can be very hectic, at least leading up to it and the first few days afterwards leading up, rolling it out. So congratulations on getting this far. And you don't look tired. You look fine.
Thank you. No, I mean, because you never know how it's, you never know how it's going to land, right? And like I said, it's very different me demoing a pre-release version to people that I know, because everyone's going to be like, this is amazing. This is great. So what we tried to do is, even with our pre-customers, right? So I knew a lot of customers from the Bonsai days, talking to them and talking to newer potential customers. Everyone was, you know, really positive with their feedback. But I think everyone's just really nice. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I would say, awesome. If you really like this, send me a PO for when it's ready within 6 months. That's where the proof is in the pudding. And we had customers actually do that. And I think that's when we knew we had something.
That's perfect.
Yep. That's when we knew we had something there. Because everyone's really nice, especially Canadians, right? Everything's good. Everyone's happy. Everyone's like so nice.
Yep.
But when it comes down to, okay, well, if you really believe in this, right, will you actually, you know, send us money? And that did happen. So we were pretty confident. And because it's a new product to kind of, no, not a new category, but it kind of spans across multiple categories. We wanted to see how it fitted in. And like I said, so far, so good.
One thing before we move on to our picks. So I totally agree with you about, if somebody's willing to pay for something before it exists, you know you're onto something. That's awesome. Probably the biggest lesson I learned from Hyperfish was landing that first big customer was like the biggest blessing and the biggest curse all at the same time, right? It was awesome because we'd landed a big customer. We're off to the races. We thought, this is brilliant. And they shielded us from our problems, I guess. They blinded us to what we really should have been working on in a more broad sense. So they were so big. They were a large customer, like many tens of thousands of seats. And they were using it for a very specific problem. And it shielded us, like it put blinkers on us to what other customers would want as well. So it was like, that's probably the biggest takeaway I had from Hyperfish was, yeah, you think you've absolutely nailed it, right? And if you get your head buried down in the weeds and don't keep an eye on what's really going on in the broad spectrum of customers, you're sort of equally as stuffed as not having any, so, or very close to it. So it was, yeah, I love that you're thinking about this stuff, about testing early and keeping your eye on the prize of like, what's the broad problem we're trying to solve here, not for one specific customer?
I wake up every day shitting myself, right? That's basically what startup life is like. I mean, that literally what it is, right? It's like it goes from, oh my God, I've got 9 demos today, to, oh my God, no one's, you know, to like, oh my God, there's no demos tomorrow. Like it literally is a roller coaster of like crazy emotions each and every day, right? Each and every day. But you know, I love it. And the team that we have working with me is amazing. I just do the front end part, but the people that are the other founders of Orchestry, and we've got 4 of us, they're incredible, right? They're awesome.
That's awesome.
So it makes it all worthwhile. But yeah, like you said, I mean, we had that with Bonsai as well, right? We got one customer who was, you know, giganormous. And then, you know, we need this. We're prepared to pay extra. We're like, yes, we'll build this. We'll do it. And then it turns out that, you know, every other customer was like, what the hell is this? This doesn't make any sense to any of us. But yeah, like I said, we've tried to keep that vision. And I got to be honest with you, doing it the second time is much, much easier from everything, right? Even understanding legal terminology in terms of usage contracts, right? That's something no one tells you. Lawyers will gladly charge you $500 an hour for hour after hour to go through this. But even those things are much, much, much easier. And we've tried to do the company, which is super lean as well. So all of our UX work is out of Poland. We've got a bunch of really good UX designers there. A lot of the testing that we do as well, we use like a remote testing service, which does really good UX testing, where it's not SharePoint people, they're just random people that you pay. It's like, I don't know, $1 per test. So you actually get a true reflection of that.
Fantastic.
But it's much easier the second time than the first time.
Good lessons, I guess, right? It's the whole part of the journey.
Yeah.
All right. So orchestry.com if people want to find out more. Shall we wrap this up and go on to our picks, AC?
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show.
Okay, it's that time of the show. We get plenty of listeners who I'm pretty sure fast forward to the end of the show to find our picks. I'm not 100% sure, it's just a hunch. But it's a favorite part of the show for everybody. And we've given you a heads up on picks, Michael. Each week we try to, at least each week, pick something interesting we've come across. Could be anything, tech-related, non-tech-related, a book, painting, article, blog post, could be anything, device. And we see what people come up with. And it's fascinating what people come up with. So I'm I'm looking forward to hearing what you have for us this week. But why don't you take us away with your pick?
Awesome. So my pick, so Orchestry Global Headquarters is literally me sitting on my dining room table trying to do webinars and demos and everything else. And I think I told, you know, Chris and Andrew before this, my nine-month-old is probably about 4 meters away. And I have a French bulldog, which for some reason likes to bark at every single thing. So probably the best thing that I've learned, there's a product called Crisp. So K-R-I-S-P, Crisp, like Krispy Kreme donuts. So crisp.ai. Sorry, maybe the accent is going to throw people off, but crisp.ai. It's a tool, it's an AI tool that actually filters out background noises in real time. And I have to say, this thing is mind-blowing. It's $5 a month. You can go and get a free version. I think it's like 120 minutes a week or something.
Yeah.
It's absolutely surreal. Now, I know Teams is going to have this background suppression thing, but this thing has changed my life because, like I said, there's literally noises. We live downtown as well, so, you know, there's police cars and people screaming and God knows what else going on. Download it. It has blown my mind just how effective it is. So we've done tests here where I'll be speaking into a microphone and then my wife will be screaming and the dog will be barking just to see how effective it is. And it will literally filter out quite a bit of that noise. Your voice will get pixelated a little bit because it's trying to do that kind of filtering in real time. But it's probably the best thing that I've kind of downloaded. And I think the paid version is like $5 per user per month. So it is awesome, especially if you're doing like airport travels. I mean, who knows if we're ever going to see an airport again, assuming we are. You can also install it onto your phone as well, and it'll do that live filtering through there. Super neat, super cool. Like I said,
that's really clever.
It's very, very cool.
If I'd known about this an hour ago, I would have put it on my computer because if you heard during the interview, I had to sort of mute my mic a couple of times because my wife is a smoothie maker and there was some smoothie making going on in the background. So I'll give this a shot.
It's great.
This service, it sounds like a prime thing that's going to get gobbled up by like an Amazon or Microsoft or an Apple or somebody like that.
100%. Like, yeah, 100%.
It sounds like that's going to happen. Second of all, CJ, you bring that up a lot. I'm curious, do smoothies ever get made at any other time than when we do our show in your house? Because that's what I thought. All right, that's cool. That's fine.
No, it's always the morning. It's always the morning between 8 and 9 a.m. Yeah. And usually, no, it doesn't look like I'm getting
It's funny. Because, so you have like that, you have the virtual background going and I'll see you kind of like get distracted for a second. You'll look over and it's like, okay. And you kind of reach out and you can't see it because it still gets cut off the whole thing and it comes in. And then you see like this green or brown kind of like concoction.
Unlike yours, Michael, they're not cocktails, but it'd be great if they were.
Well, what you should do is just get your wife to make all the smoothies for the whole week during the show. And just have that thing
a
going.
Whole hour of smoothie making.
That thing going all the time.
Yeah, I'm like, where's my smoothie? I mean, she comes, like, everything, your daughter brings them in. I'm like, can I get one of those?
Yeah, yeah. They don't fly well. Mm. But yeah, okay. So Crisp for noise reduction. Definitely, I'm definitely going to check this out. This looks
cool. You mentioned something about not being ever able to see airports again. But like everyone this week is seeing airports again because they're getting that Microsoft Flight Simulator that everyone's been going crazy about that is slowing down the internet.
Maybe that's why it's so busy. Maybe that's why it's going crazy because everybody's like, I want to fly. Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah.
Interesting. I would not be sad if I never saw an airport again. That's for sure.
I'm not missing the travel.
All right, AC, what have you got for us this week?
So I'm kind of going out on a limb that something is going to get announced by the time this show comes out, but I'm not too worried about it because I'm in a time box and it has to happen because that's what I've paid for. So I'm going to say something and that our listeners are going to be like, what in the hell are you thinking? And I totally get it, all right? But let me just preface this with, this is not me. There is a lot of thought put into this. There's actually some very specific reasons I'm doing this. It does make a hell of a lot of sense. No, I'm not breaking the bank by doing this. And trust me, I know what I'm doing. And no, I'm not going to explain every single reason on the show because part of it's a little contractual and stuff. But I'm sponsoring a NASCAR team and I'm doing it for a race that's coming up later this week when the show comes out. So you will see the voice.
There's a first. Yeah,
It is a first, yeah. So it is, for those of you who are NASCAR fans, let me just kind of temper your expectations just a little bit. It is not NASCAR Cup. I'm sponsoring a NASCAR Xfinity Series car. I'm not going to be on the hood of the car. I'm going to be in the rear quarter panel towards the rear. It is not about having my logo on the car, although that's going to be cool, and I'm looking forward to getting the pictures of that and potentially seeing it on TV. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that goes along on the back end of it, and no, it is not a four-trade deal. I mean, yes, I'm having to pay for a sponsorship, but I've paid, the contract is done. It's going to be on the car for the Darlington race, which is on September the 3rd. I believe it's at 8 o'clock at night. I've got a link to the NASCAR Xfinity Series schedule. The team that I'm sponsoring is the Joe Graff Jr. car, his number 8. He's a rookie. He's in the top quarter of the speed chart that they got for on the Xfinity Series. And so, yeah, so it sounds absolutely crazy, but yes, I'm doing it. And
that's awesome. Yeah. It sounds wild and crazy, but we've actually spoken about a little bit of the reason, your reasoning why and your rationale for, and this is not some random splurge that you're doing, right? This is actually quite well thought out. And I don't even know if marketing is the right way to call us. Sales.
It's a business opportunity. It's a business opportunity.
Yeah.
Let's just say I'm going at this eyes wide open. And think of this as like having a certain amount of money that you walk into a Las Vegas casino with, and you're going to play blackjack. I might come out of the casino with nothing, and I will have had a good time, but I actually got something out of it. And this, I will at least get some pictures out of this I can use for marketing. And I'm sure I would expect that some people are going to be like, what in the hell? And they're going to all like retweet this or whatever. And it's like, that's fine, because that'll get good marketing too. I might go in and I might come out with the money that I came in with. And I might have like, it might work out just okay. And I might come out and I might have a whole bunch of additional sales that come out of this. And you know what? I am perfectly fine with all three of those options. And the last one being probably the biggest reach. The first two probably being more reasonable, but it's worth it. It's where I've asked a few people going, tell me this does not make sense. And they're like, oh my God, this actually does make a lot of sense. I'm like, that's what I thought. Yeah. So thank you very much for the feedback.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. I was like, what the hell are you thinking? And then, oh, actually that makes a lot of sense. Now you explain it.
So how about you? What you got for us this week?
Very cool. Well, mine's quite different. Speaking of flight simulator, you know how Hurricane Laura is bearing down on the US or has made landfall and is wreaking all sorts of havoc? Apparently, because Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 incorporates real-time weather into the game, there are swarms of hundreds of pilots taking to the skies and going hurricane chasing. And so in real time, right now, you can go into Flight Sim, go fly into the eye of Hurricane Laura as it's approaching the Gulf Coast, and be flying around with hundreds of other pilots who are all kind of doing the same sort of thing. Let's set aside the devastation that the hurricane is going to cause for a second here, but how the meshing of the real world and the virtual world is taking place over something like this with weather is pretty fascinating to me.
I saw this earlier today as well. The same guy, he tagged both of us on this on Facebook.
Yep. Yeah,
I grabbed this link and I actually put it in as my pick this week. And I looked down like, what are you picking? I'm like, oh, wow, okay, I guess I can't pick this because CJ's picking this. This sent me over the edge. This was like, all right, you know what? That's it. I'm putting a partition on my machine. This is too freaking cool. I want to try this out. This is so interesting. You'd love to be able to see this stuff. And this is like, I'd love to see the hurricane from the hurricane hunter's point of view. And it's like, and so.
Yeah, go hurricane hunting. I mean, Flight Sim's pretty fun. I've been playing a little bit of it recently, but the fact that they've sort of incorporated real-world air traffic control and weather, and it's a great sim, and there's amazing graphics, of course, but it just sort of makes it a little bit more real. Like last night at about 11 p.m. Pacific time, I was flying with a friend of mine who's also in Pacific time in the U.S., but we took off out of Wellington in New Zealand, which is both of our hometowns, and which was at dusk. Right. And so we took off at Wellington at dusk and were flying around and ended up flying down to Christchurch down in New Zealand. And it was just super cool. And we're in formation with, you know, he was flying in a 787 and I was flying in a turboprop. So he had to slow right down and I was basically like, I had my foot to the floor, but he was trying to stay afloat.
So you see other planes that other people who are playing the game? Oh my God.
You see real air traffic as well. So like on approach to SeaTac, for example, I was landing the other day and I saw all the other planes lining up to come into SeaTac.
Oh my God. So I've seen a couple of UX bugs. One quick question is, I've seen a couple of UX bugs in this where you have like the ridiculously tall tower in, I think, Australia and Melbourne. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that dude like actually landed on top of it. Any chance we're going to see like sharks in the hurricane? Like for like when the dude's
Sharknado. That would be pretty sweet. Hell of a scary. Flying instrument flight, right, with zero visibility, and some jaws comes out of the cloudy abyss and and into your cockpit, that
Mayday, I have a squid in my propeller.
Awesome. Yeah. I got bitten in half. Nice. Yeah, definitely give it a shot. I mean, it is an absolute GPU killer of a game. I have a beast of a machine, and my office at home is like a bloody sauna when it's running. I mean, it's roasting. My GPU is going 100 million miles an hour, so it's a beast. You need a fairly good GPU, but other than that, super good. Super good fun.
Very cool.
All right. Well, thanks, Michael, for joining us on the show. Really appreciate you coming on and talking about Orchestry. I urge everybody to go orchestry.com and go read a little bit more about what you guys are up to. I think I'm personally stoked to see you getting into the startup game again after your Bonsai experience.
Awesome, thank you.
And I was sort of just sitting, biding my time, wondering, I wonder what he's up to now. And then I saw the Orchestry announcement. I was like, excellent. This is brilliant. So, yeah, congratulations on launching. I know it's a massive milestone and a ton of work to get to. So props to you and your team, and be watching how it all unfolds.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Cheers.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app. It helps people find out about our show and grow our audience, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play it on the show. You can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll get notices of each episode as well as the show notes sent to you directly each week. We'll be back with a new episode next week. Thanks for listening.